This podcast was produced and recorded in the studios of Cairns FM 89.1.
This is The Evolution of Intimacy with Ella Shannon, a show about sex, relationships, and everything in between.
You can start to feel bliss while you're vacuuming.
I don't know if I've tried that or not. Do I want to try it? What is it?
Very complex, very interesting.
Flogging, whipping, caning.
So there I was in my high heels and my little dress.
So it is purely a stigma.
Healthy sexual expression with other humans.
I went to the local women's health centre and went, I think I'm a lesbian. Is there a support group?
They don't know quite how to talk about it.
It's actually a core skill in relationships.
That has always worked for me.
My guest is Stacey McAuliffe, an Australian sexologist, who is going to talk to us about anorgasmia. Welcome, Stacey.
Hi, Ella. Thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure. So that's a funny term, anorgasmia. Can you please explain to the audience what that is?
Yeah, it's a funny word and I often mispronounce it. So if I do that in this episode, bear with me. So anorgasmia is delayed, infrequent, or the absence of orgasms. It's a term that is usually used for those with a vulva, vagina, or clitoris. For those with a penis, the equivalent of this diagnosis would be delayed ejaculation.
Uh-huh.
And if someone is seeking a medical diagnosis, they would usually check that this has been the case for around 6 months.
And is it very common? Is that something that many people experience?
It ranges in how common it is. Before I get into how common, because I just want to touch on the language that I'm going to be using.
Great.
So as we're talking about a sexual topic, we're going to be talking about bodies. And I usually prefer to ask those I'm chatting with about the language that they prefer me to use. So I can use male and female, or focusing on body parts such as people with penises, people with a vulva. But because I can't ask your audience, I am going to use the term women, as the studies, particularly the ones that talk about how common it is, do use the language of woman because they're usually focusing on cisgender women. But most of the information that we'll talk about today is going to apply to pretty much anyone with a vulva or a clitoris. Most of it will still relate to it. So as to how common this is, it's a bit of a grey area because there's different studies showing different results. But if we look at the range across all of these studies, we typically find around 5 to 17% of women have never orgasmed. So some of these studies focus only on heterosexual women, though. So they tend to be the ones with the higher end of numbers, so closer to that 17%. But ones that are a bit more inclusive usually sit around kind of 5 to 10%.
That's really interesting. It sounds really high, actually, doesn't it?
There is a lot of shame for some women attached to this. So we actually don't know how accurate these numbers are, and they're just estimates. Some studies often state that we think these numbers are even higher. Some statistics I can share is only 6% of women report as always having an orgasm. When we talk about sex, there's different ways of having sex, and particularly with heterosexual couples, the most common way of having sex is intercourse through the penis in the vagina. And we find that 81.6% of women don't orgasm this way. They also need clitoral stimulation.
Yeah.
We know that many women who do struggle to orgasm during partnered sex are able to orgasm though through masturbation. So because there's different ways of having sex and different types, these numbers are all skewed across different studies, so getting clear pictures on these numbers is a little bit difficult.
You are listening to The Evolution of Intimacy with me, Ella Shannon, a show about sex, relationships, and everything in between.
Most of us have not been encouraged or taught how to talk about sex.
They are curious.
Hang on a sec. I'm a woman. Like, I have needs now.
Whole new level of sensation and pleasure.
I looked at my yoni before and after and I was like, oh my God.
You may experience a range of emotions.
What we associate as being related to one gender or another, it changes all the time.
Pleasure is our birthright.
You're on these massive doses of steroids. I looked like Bert Newton. I wouldn't have been attracted to myself.
So they were just so happy to know that A, they weren't alone, and B, that this was like a legitimate thing.
And that actually sounds really lovely and erotic, really pleasurable.
It's a secret.
Mind-blowing.
Are there reasons that can be identified of why this is happening for some women?
Yes, that's a little bit different for different women. One of the things that we do have in common when working with clients, panorgasmia, is our brains are kind of the most important organ in our bodies when it comes to sex. We often focus on the genitals, but the ability to orgasm actually sits within our brains. So how connected our brains are to our body largely impacts the ability to orgasm. Mm. So we often see with this cohort presenting with either infrequent orgasms, they struggle to orgasm, or having never an orgasm. There's a disconnection from their body. So for some people, it could be temporary, as in I'm stressed today and my mind is wandering of all the to-do lists that I've got, and that kind of wandering of the mind disconnects themselves from being able to have an orgasm because their focus is elsewhere. But we see a more significant disconnection for some women that present with never having had an orgasm. And some of these reasons could be past trauma, not necessarily sexual trauma, but sometimes that's the case.
Yeah.
We see a lot of people who present as they kind of learn early on to be people pleasers, and they've got a bit of a disconnection in their, they kind of shut themselves down a little bit. So working with that with some clients is definitely what needs to occur before they can orgasm or learn to. We know that a lot of people, particularly women, are taught shame around their genitals, and, you know, it might be parents, society, religion, kind of adding to this shame. In fact, some religions actually teach, you know, that masturbation is a sin and touching genitals, and a lot of areas around sex are kind of connected to and labelled with both sin, guilty, and are shameful. So a lot of people internalise this. Whether they try their best to not listen to those messages, they do impact them.
You are listening to The Evolution of Intimacy with me, Ella Shannon, a show about sex, relationships, and everything in between.
Most of us have not been encouraged or taught how to talk about sex.
They are curious.
Hang on a sec. I'm a woman. Like, I have needs now.
Whole new level of sensation and pleasure.
I looked at my yoni before and after and I was like, oh my God.
You may experience a range of emotions.
What we associate as being related to one gender or another, it changes all the time.
Pleasure is our birthright.
You're on these massive doses of steroids. I looked like Bert Newton. I wouldn't have been attracted to myself.
So they were just so happy to know that A, they weren't alone, and B, that this was like a legitimate thing.
And that actually sounds really lovely and erotic, really pleasurable.
It's a secret.
Mind-blowing.
We also know that there's a lot of people with vulvas, vaginas, clitorises that haven't had the education on their bodies that we really need them to have. I don't know what it was like when you went to school, but when I went, we didn't learn about the clitoris.
No. Nope.
I didn't know it existed. I wasn't taught about pleasure. I assume that was the case for most people. And I certainly wasn't taught about the right to pleasure. It's a part of the education system that's really lacking. And because not everyone knows it, that the clitoris exists, but the clitoris is the main way that most people are able to have an orgasm, You know, we unfortunately leave a lot of people, we kind of stop them from having pleasure by not teaching them about their bodies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's sad, isn't it, that we can't have that conversation more openly, especially with young people. How does anorgasmia affect the people who experience it, but as well as their partners?
This is an area that I often see a lot of clients experiencing this, coming in and they're kind of feeling like they're broken.
Yeah.
They feel that their bodies have let them down. For some people, there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of embarrassment. I would say for a lot of people presenting with this, there's not necessarily a focus on what they have lost. It's more about that they're unable to give their partner an orgasm, which just kind of highlights that lack of disconnection of their right to pleasure.
And it puts more pressure, doesn't it, then if you feel like, oh, they're trying to make me have an orgasm and I've got to do that for them, like perform this thing, it adds to the issue.
Yeah, and for some women that pressure is coming from their partner. And for some, they're putting that pressure on themselves.
Mm.
So there's definitely a mix out there. So when I'm working with clients, I'm trying to get an understanding of where is this pressure coming from? Is it them, their partners? And then there's a lot of education around, you know, the way the body works and just, you know, giving them statistics on orgasms and pointing out that not everyone's having an orgasm every time they have sex and that it's a part of sex, but it's not all of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, these days, thankfully, the message has moved on from orgasms being the pinnacle of sex. It's more about the journey, that there's a lot of pleasure to be had from sex without having an orgasm.
Yeah.
And that's both a helpful message for this cohort of people that are able to experience an orgasm, because, you know, it takes the pressure off that you can enjoy sex and you can have a great relationship with your partner or multiple partners or yourself, regardless of whether you orgasm. Women that are bringing up that they struggled to have an orgasm and they're really wanting one, if you've never been able to have one and you're feeling broken and you're feeling that your body is letting you down, some of these women will try anything to experience one and go to resources such as forums on the internet or chat with friends. And because we've evolved and this message is now more about the journey than the orgasm, I'm starting to see that some women are kind of being shamed for wanting so desperately to have an orgasm. The journey is kind of the most important part, and that you don't have to have an orgasm to experience great sex, but also acknowledging the need to experience something when you feel like you've been left out of the party, I guess. Does that make sense?
It really does. I've had clients like that, and, you know, really trying to normalize and talk all about exactly the journey and how much arousal and connection and pleasure you can feel. And just really hearing their longing, like, yeah, I hear you, Ella, but, you know, everyone else has had this really special experience. I'd really like to try to have that myself. So I really get that. Acknowledging that longing and that want, and that, of course, that's really understandable. Do you think it can be learned? It's something that can change?
It definitely can be. Not for everyone. I have worked with lots of clients on this and seen some really great results. Seen women that book in sessions, or not necessarily women, but people of all genders with a vulva or clitoris booking in and wanting to work on this. As you said, there's that need, I want to experience something that everyone else seems to be experiencing. And so I've definitely seen that it can be learned. It's not something that can change overnight.
Yeah.
It's something that takes a lot of work and a lot of practice. I often talk about you've got to flex the new muscle and lay some new neural pathway, particularly if you've been really disconnected from your body, being disconnected for many years. I've worked with clients that coming to address this in their 30s, 40s, and I've even got clients up to, you know, in their 70s that want to learn to have an orgasm. You know, we've got to undo all the years of disconnection to start being able to connect.
Yeah.
There's different ways that we can do that. So one is working out what actually you get pleasure from. a lot of people coming in with this have no idea what excites them, how they can be aroused, what gives them pleasure. So we absolutely explore through lots of different methods depending on people's comfortability. So I might suggest some erotic fiction, audiobook, erotic ASMR. Google talks about women are mostly searching for lesbian sex, female masturbation, oral sex, it might be threesome, dominance. So whatever you kind of think might turn you on, searching for those terms. For some women, I might point them towards pornography if they're okay with that particular cohort of women. I tend to find there's a lot of shame connected to pornography, so we kind of work through that.
Mm.
Bring them towards erotic films that are designed not for male audiences,
yeah.
Which 95% of pornography are there is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely some that we can bring them towards which are produced by women for women that we consider kind of more ethical pornography. Yeah, working on that connection between mind and body, so a lot of mindful practices, focusing in on what do you feel inside of you and learning, you know, do you see your heart rate increase, that kind of mindfulness activities. Guiding women on how to masturbate. A lot of women, particularly in this cohort, have either never masturbated or there's a lot of shame around it. They were taught very limited ways to masturbate, expanding that horizon and what does it look like and how what can feel good for you. I give a lot of my clients a guided vulva mapping audio, which is a pre-recorded audio that they can follow along to, and it teaches them about their body and they can explore their body as the audio goes through what to feel and what to look out for.
Sounds fun.
That's a nice way to step into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that lots of people with vulvas who don't orgasm, at least during partnered sex, often will fake an orgasm so that their partner doesn't feel bad. What's your thoughts about that, Stacey?
I'm pretty sure a 2019 study found that around 58% of women have faked an orgasm at some point in their sexual life. Quite a significant number. That's, you know, more than half of women that have faked an orgasm. And as you mentioned, it's often to please a partner. There's this belief that they have to orgasm for their partner to be satisfied or for sex to be good. And that if they haven't orgasmed, then there's something wrong with them or that it's their fault. It's definitely something that we see in this particular cohort that they've faked many orgasms throughout their life. Not all. There's some women that have never faked and they lie within this cohort as well. So it's a real mix. What I do like to say about faking orgasms is that we're not necessarily going to, well, you're not going to learn about what excites you or arouses your body if you're not giving your partner the opportunity to know that what you're doing isn't arousing you or isn't pleasing you, or faking it doesn't really help anyone. But I understand why women do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, well, you've just shared so much interesting statistics and some fantastic tips, Stacey. It's been lovely to talk to you. If people are listening and wanted to find out more about you or your work, how would they do that?
Instagram's the best way. O code sexology. O for orgasm.
Yeah.
And then code CODE and then sexology.
Gorgeous. I love it. Oh, well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Ella. It's been fantastic.
You've been listening to The Evolution of Intimacy with Ella Shannon.
We're feeling juicy the whole day.
Every desire I could possibly think of.
What sort of impact would it have?
They want it, they're going to go and get it. They don't think of long-term consequences.
Oh, did that feel really nice? Oh, yes, that felt really delicious.
Being able to feel good about my body again, that's been a huge thing.
All anybody really wants in this world is to feel seen and heard.
We actually do have a lot that connects us physically.
It's making people feel good.
There is a real sense of hopefulness that returns in the relationship.
A really beautiful thing.
Take that beauty and that calmness and that bliss and that sense of peace out into the world.
Thank you for listening, and I hope we've inspired you with our juicy conversations on this episode of The Evolution of Intimacy. If you would like to go deeper, you can book a session of relationship counselling, sex therapy, or individual counselling via my website. I work in person in Cairns, tropical far north Queensland, or I can meet you online anywhere in the world. Or you might prefer to go at your own pace with my 12-lesson relationship and intimacy online course. To book or to listen to previous episodes, visit my website, ellashannon.com, or follow me on the socials at Evolution of Intimacy. Finally, please go to iTunes and write me a quick review if you're feeling kind. Thank you, lovelies, and see you next time.